A couple of weeks ago, I said that I would speak to you about that nebulous, unpredictable, adventurous reality called soul. And so today, I would like to speak to you about this threefold direction, if you will, of spirit. We might call today's lesson the Spirit's Search for Soul. We might call it the threefold path of spirit. We might call it the directions of spirit. Or, in plain language, we might say that today's lesson will be entitled, The Spirit Goes Up, The Spirit Goes Down, and The Spirit Goes All Around. And I would like to take a look at each of those directions. The upward movement of the Spirit, the downward movement of the Spirit, and the spiral nature or the horizontal nature of spirit, spirit's outreach, if you will, to the world and the world's outreach to spirit. It's a wonderful thing, this reality called the self and the soul. Richard Felder and Abram Wise say it this way, in seeking what I mean by the self, please include your soul, your spirit, God, all your feelings, the best and worst experiences you have ever had, and all the others too, the unknown and your best friend. And don't leave out your growing edge, the collective unconscious, the hero with 1,000 faces, and both sides of all the paradoxes. When they say that the self is simple, that's only one side of the coin, isn't it? The self is also very, very complex, very, very rich. And this today is what I would like to honor, if you will, the complexity and richness of the self. That it is not only a simple reality, but a very complex one. It's always both and, never either or. But first, the spirit goes up. Perhaps this one, our culture understands this direction of spirit, our culture understands best. I think this is the direction of spirit that we are most familiar with, correct? The spirituality of transcendence. Thomas More talks about in his wonderful recent book called The Care of the Soul. He calls spirituality that lofty quest for the highest vision. Universal moral principles. Liberation from the many limitations of our human life. And finally, consciousness, awareness, and the highest values. I think of the Pledge of Allegiance, when I get in touch with this most common understanding of spirituality. To one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The spirit goes up. With this thinking, one can become very anti-materialistic, One can deny body and the pleasure of sex if one only follows this one direction of spirit. Celibacy. Monks and nuns. Priests go under this rubric. Those who deny, if you will, the pleasures of family and the pleasures of conjugal love. But we can also think of the New Age monks. What are the New Age monks? Those are folks who are into computers and collecting data. We are cultivating New Age monks when our children are totally spaced out before the computer and playing computer games and collecting them. That's what monks did. They collected manuscripts and old books, right? The abstract. Spirituality is the word. Today would be the almighty data bank. It is very important to collect the wisdom of the world, traditions. But if we merely collect and do not live what we are collecting, it can be almost, you know, a compulsive kind of cosmic anal retentiveness. Whereby all we're doing is gathering, 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 and protecting and protecting, but it becomes a kind of a mania. The spirit goes up. With this kind of direction, we look more toward heaven than earth, don't we? It is a heaven-oriented kind of thinking with our spirituality. Of course, although this is a very important understanding of one of the directions of spirit, if we only go in this direction, we are in trouble. Because we can avoid our daily problems, our issues, which get bigger and bigger if we don't attend to them. What also happens if we go only upward, if you will, in our spirituality, it can become very abstract and it can become very intellectual at one level, and at another level it can become very fundamentalist. The fundamentalist does not want to see the nuances of the musical note, for instance. Thomas More brings that out. He says, go to a low note, the low C on a piano, and hit it very hard, and will you get only C? No. You will get overtones of other notes. The fundamentalist wants to take out all of the overtones. Give me the C. And that's all that I want to hear. Okay? And so it's very dangerous for in our search for clarity, in our search for the truth. Sometimes what we can do is say, well, give me the one truth and I don't want to look at all the other overtones and undertones of experience. Are you with me? So the spirituality that goes only upward, the direction of upward, the direction of the abstract, into logic and into reason, into the rarefied realms, you see, can find, if you will, clear crystals of truth, can, in the sunlight realm of consciousness, discover truth. But there are always the overtones and undertones of an experience and of truth. And those overtones and undertones are these other directions, if you will, of spirit I am suggesting to you today. Okay? The path upward is the one that we're most familiar with, right? Heaven, the mountain, God the Father, who dwells in another realm. Even the Greeks, with their notion of Zeus as the king of all the gods of at least the God realm of sunlight consciousness. Zeus on the mountain top. Hey. That's okay. So, this path, this direction of spirit that only goes upward, is one that's common, is one that is familiar to us all. And it is certainly an important one. But there are many, many other nuances. There are many other directions of spirit, and I think we're beginning to discover these today. See, what happens if we only honor one direction of the spirit, we will repress a lot of power and it will appear in very, very monstrous kinds of forms. And I've spoken about this time and time again in terms of our living in a very sexually repressed religiosity. And yet, a very sexually obsessed culture. Whatever we repress, it will come out in a perverted and distorted form. It seems to me that what happens when we only honor one direction of the Spirit, we will be overwhelmed and overcome by the other manifestations of spirit. Or the other directions, if you will, that spirit need take for fullness to discover the self with a capital S. Whatever we deny or try to cut out will eventually rule us. And the spirituality that is exclusively upward moving can get into a lot of problems. It tries to avoid the problems of everyday life. It tries to cut out what is hated. It gets into polarities, right? Divisions, either ors. And there is little spiritual growth in terms of depth. One can exist pretty well in an ivory tower or in a monastery or in any institution, excluding other aspects of our rich, rich world. But also what happens is we lack size, don't we? You know, and of course, when I talk about size, I mean spiritual and emotional size. Even mental size. We lack breadth and depth. The spirit also goes down. I would like to suggest to you, and again, Thomas More speaks of this so eloquently in his book, The Care of the Soul. I think we're beginning to learn this from all the various feeling-oriented therapies, the power of dreams, power of the unconscious, and most importantly, that kind of longing that we're having to reconnect with our souls, that sense that we've lost soul, the spirit that goes downward, the downward direction of the spirit is precisely this recovering of soul. And let me suggest this to you as a kind of image, this directional image. By going down is where we really discover soul. And I believe that we are feeling terribly in this decade, and perhaps for many, many years, we've felt the loss of soul, perhaps because our spirituality was only upward moving, and it wasn't downward moving, right? And we'd have these problems, these confusions, these tumultuous passions, these longings within ourselves, right? And eventually we'd end up sometimes in a hospital, right, for depression, or we'd go into treatment, or we'd go to a therapist, right? And all of a sudden, oh my God, a psychotherapist, right? A shrink. I have to go to a shrink. Remember that term? I mean, psyche, psychotherapy, psyche means spirit. Right? And it's true that I think no one would have gotten that term if that's not what they did. See, what happened is psychotherapy became very, very rigid and dogmatic and fundamentalist. You see, fundamentalism can happen anywhere, even in the neo-Nazi-dom of 12 steps, as we've found out, right? You know, you got to be real careful, this fundamentalist kind of attitude. But psychotherapy, psyche means spirit. Actually, it means yusuke, the Greek, soul. All right? So I hope that anyone who's really doing psychotherapy is not a shrink, but an expander. That's what goal I would like to have as a therapist, and certainly in going to a therapist, if someone's going to allow me for the spirit to go down, right? To go downward. I would hope that would mean that the self would expand and not shrink. That the mind would expand, that the heart would expand, and that the soul would expand, you see. This is the movement downward. The spirit goes down. And our avoidance of the downward movement is perhaps what occurs. You know, it's an interesting thing. With the spirit going downward, what this means is everything that we've done, every mistake, every failure, every overindulgence has been food and nurturing for the soul. Gerald May talks about that when he says that alcoholism and drug addiction is the sacred disease. We can thank God for addiction in this particular aspect, because the journey towards spirit is a very, very complex one. And none of you would be here, I say here, in your path of development right now, in your understanding of awareness, and in your development of your emotions and development of your mind and souls that are far more rich today than they were yesterday. You would not be here if it weren't for your addictions. So we can thank them. See, the spirit that moves downward, and this notion of soul, because that's what soulfulness is. Soulfulness is about going downward. It's not the upward movement of spirit. It's the downward movement of spirit, and we'll also talk about it. It's also the around. It's out there. It's the world soul as well. But soul, to find soul means we have to fail. We have to discover our limits. We have to get drunk. We have to throw up. We have to get sick on the honeycomb of experience. We have to be kind of swallowed and spit out by the world. You know, Jonah and the whale. See, if we really understand soul, it is the downward movement of the spirit. And it will always be more profound than what we can ever handle. And perhaps that's why so often many of us have avoided that place, right? It's interesting. Perhaps we were searching for soul before we began our addictive behavior. And then all of a sudden it probably got so scary, that place, that passion, that power, that pulse, right? It became so powerful that we tried to get out of it and we began to medicate. Or we didn't have the tools by which to handle this downward movement of spirit that involves soul, soulfulness, the movement downward, the movement inside. And that's perhaps what psychotherapy is all about, in helping, assisting that movement, right? Assisting that movement into those places that hurt, the wound, the place of the wound. And soul can only be made by our entering, by allowing, if you will, the God of our understanding and beyond our understanding to enter the place of the wound. It is the place of the weakness where soul is made. It's the place that we're not controlling, it seems to me. When the spirit moves downward, the kind of reasoning is the reasoning of the heart. When the spirit moves downward, correct? It doesn't move by logic, at least the logic of the mind. That's why when we enter the realm of the spirit moving downward, that's when we get into things like the paradox, right? That's when we understand the nuances that I was talking to you about in that low C chord, right? Someone who understands the parable, the nuances, the many, many ways, the many dimensions of even one word understands the downward movement of soul. That's why Jesus could speak in parables. That's why Jesus could say, the child will enter the kingdom of heaven to a group of theologians. It's paradox. You will gain your life if you lose it. This is the realm of the downward movement of soul, not the upward one, because it just doesn't make sense up here. But it does make sense here. And we only know by experience that kind of sense. The downward movement of spirit is another direction of spirit which we're beginning to honor now. I guess I'm calling it soulfulness. Thomas Morris says, the soul craves depth of reflection, the many layers of meaning, nuances without end. Deals with contradiction, paradox. What we're talking about is facing the shadow. What is the shadow? Well, the shadow it's easy to name, but boy, I don't like meat in the shadow. Anybody like meat in the shadow? I don't like meat in the shadow inside myself. The shadow are all those unacceptable parts of me that I want to cut out. But if I cut them out, I'll be less than half a person, I'll eventually be very distorted, and I can do a lot of damage in my world. That's the shadow. The shadow are all those aspects of myself that I cannot accept and I wish to reject. That perhaps that's what acceptance does mean, right? At some profound level, it's not only acceptance that I'm an alcoholic or an addict or that I have an obsessive compulsive relationship with food or sex or ideas. Acceptance perhaps has to do with allowing those other rich aspects of ourself that might not fit into the category of what we might call moral or right or good, that we begin to incorporate it into our being rather than cut it out. I just remembered something. Now cut that out. Remember that? Cut it out, will you? What a spirituality that goes downward honors is never cutting it out. It does not hold a spirituality of surgical procedure. The spirituality by surgery, or what some people call a spiritual bypass, never works. We are weakened by it. We need to incorporate it into our being. And we all know this at a deep level, but it's kind of hard for us in the how, too, isn't it? Because it's so scary. And I think that's the fourth step of the 12-step program. I think really gives us a kind of balanced view when we face ourselves, you know, in the 12-12, looking at that chapter of facing ourselves. It's nothing is to be cut out. The end of any previous form of our existence is going to be felt as a real death. When we allow ourselves to see ourselves in a deeper, more complex way, we're going to have to do some grief work. Because we kind of want that old self still, don't we? That little, small, old self,
that we see the. I really believe we don't leave that self behind. We simply incorporate it to a number of other selves and allow it to work for our good. We never leave that old self behind. If we try to, that's when we get into a spirituality of upward direction only, and we will mess up. Because that old self will rear its nasty head. Got to incorporate it. Because there's some power always. There's always power back there. Power in the source that we really haven't seen fully. To allow ourselves to experience the tensions that arise from different moral claims, Thomas More talks about that. If we start getting into either or, good or right, this is the only thing that one needs to do for every circumstance, we are dishonoring the direction of the spirit that moves downward. Thomas More also brilliantly talks about the two kinds of compulsion. He says it were the two directional quality of compulsion. He says compulsion is always a desire for something, but a resistance to the heart in what it actually wants. Isn't that incredible? I love that. It's a desire for something, but at another level, resistance to what the heart actually wants. That is the core of compulsion. A spirituality that moves downward does not get into compulsions. Okay? A compulsion is actually the result of not honoring the spirit that moves downward. I desire something and I think that's what I'm desiring and that's it. Plato understood that our desire for something was always the desire for God beyond any specific and particular object. He called that eros. That desire in and of itself for fulfillment was really the all-encompassing desire. So we desire something, but we resist what our heart actually wants. And that's a compulsion. When we resist what our heart actually wants. And what does our heart actually want? Fulfillment. God. Whatever you wish to call it. Wholeness. Holiness. That's what we are wanting. When we are obsessive, when we are addicted, we desire something and we go for that something and we actually resist what our heart actually wants. It's a very powerful psychotherapeutic and ancient wisdom that Thomas More gives us that we can use in our practical day-to-day caring of our soul. The ongoing caring of our soul. The spirit moves downward as well. When the spirit moves downward, we will also honor community love. We won't be isolated. We won't be isolated. And it's important. Solitude is very important to cultivate. Because that's where we can get in touch with the important aspects of soul. But the community by which we are challenged, you know, by which we are shaped, and the community to which we are called to shape and given influence to and effect and be affected by. This is the crucible of soul making as well. Evelyn Underhill. Today, go out and buy anything. Buy a book by Evelyn Underhill. Essentials of Mysticism, for instance. It's a wonderful, this woman mystic who lived in and around Oxford in the early part of this century, struggled with her spirituality, that direction upward, the mysticism, right? And she said the only thing that would balance that would be a community. A community whereby my values are challenged, right? Whereby I experience some kind of healthy conflict and struggle, whereby I learn the hard and long lesson of compassion. I really learn love. So the spirit moving downward, the spirit moves down this direction, is important for us because it teaches us the most difficult lesson perhaps of our being on this planet that we so need to learn, and that is how to love. How to work within limits. How to love healthfully. Right? How to love with the truth.
how to love by establishing boundaries sometimes, healthy boundaries, right? Understanding that true intimacy cannot occur if I'm constantly allowing my boundaries to be crossed and crossing the boundaries of others. So when the Spirit moves downward, soul is made. Soul becomes made. And it is always in the making. And isn't that what we're doing now? And I think perhaps when psychotherapy begins to work with religion, and religion works with psychotherapy, we've got an upward movement spirituality and a downward movement spirituality. Are you with me? We've got that twofold process working. See, what the awful shame is when religion dismisses psychotherapy, it only goes upward. And then what happens? Well, most recently we see a whole lot of sexual acting out, don't we? Right? Jimmy Swagger, Tammy Baker, priests who are going to jail for pedophilia. It's not funny. It's not funny at all. It's one of the most serious tragedies that I can think of. Because what happens when religion only goes upward and it does not go downward, what it is trying to avoid will capture it, and it will always act out in a distorted and perverted way. So that's why, as the soul moving downward, the Spirit moving downward, this isn't kind of a kind of convenient, kind of cute kind of picture that I'm drawing for you. It is one of our deepest challenges. But it's only part of it. Because there's other directions of the Spirit. There is another direction of the Spirit. The Spirit goes up, the Spirit goes down, and the Spirit goes all around. And this third aspect of the Spirit is just as important. Just as important. You all remember Wordsworth and probably heard this poem from lines composed a few miles above Tintern Abbey. Wordsworth understood this notion that the spirit, the soul and the world, and the world and the soul are reflection of the same thing, and we meet in some degree our soul and our spirit when the outer worlds and the inner worlds meet. This is beautiful. For I have learned to look on nature not as in the hour of thoughtless youth, but hearing oftentimes the still sad music of humanity, nor harsh nor grating, though of ample power to chasten and subdue. I have felt a presence that disturbs me with the joy of elevated thoughts, a sense sublime of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of the setting suns, and the round ocean, and the living air, and the blue sky. And in the mind of man, a motion and a spirit that impels all thinking things, all objects of all thought, enrolls through all things. Enrolls through all things. The Spirit rolls through all things. There is not one thing that we can see and that we can touch that the Spirit does not move through. There is nothing we can exclude. And unless we see the sacredness of all things, the things of the earth, we will keep producing and turning things into ugliness. See, that's what happens when we do not. When we do not see this other direction of the Spirit, that a Spirit rolls through all things, that it is constantly immersed in moving, fluctuating, moving in and out of all the things in the world. Everything, even inanimate things, things that we make because they're only reflections of our own soul. And that's what's scary to me, because we've made so many big guns, you know, and they're reflections of our soul. We make things that are ugly, and they're reflections of our soul because we make them. But we also make things that are beautiful, and not pretty, but things that give us a profundity of life, that have depth. And that's why it's important that where we live becomes a microcosm of our own soul. Where we live is a microcosm of our own soul and how we live. No matter how small the room, no matter how small the closet, all the things that we touch, all the things that we look upon and that look back at us are reflection of this movement of spirit. I love this when he says, to look on nature not as in the hour of thoughtless youth. We're talking about something mature here. We're not talking about that kind of adolescent, well, now I'm going to go out into and walk through the forest, you know. And so we do that as adults. You know, we think like getting back to nature means, you know, we're going to go sort of take a vacation away from the city, you know. But we don't learn from the things that nature is teaching us until, of course, we experience the Spirit moving down. And we utilize our depression, we utilize our grief, and then all of a sudden, nature awakens, you know, to us, doesn't it? And this is the deeper soul of this spiritual movement, this movement of the Spirit, this direction of the Spirit outward into the world of things. And another poem by one of my esteemed mentors. Mentors can be books or authors, you know, that don't live in the physical form that we are aware of them living, but Rerena Rilke wrote a poem that talks about this world soul, this animus mundi. Rilke said around 1900 that I live my life in growing orbits which move out over the things of the world, and perhaps I can never achieve the last, but that will be my attempt. I am circling around God, around the ancient tower, and I have been circling for 1,000 years, and I still don't know if I am a falcon or a storm or a great song. Rilke, more than any, it seems to me, more than anyone that we have in the West, even more than Wordsworth, Rilke was German, understood the sacredness of things, understood the holiness of all that is in the world, and excluded nothing. The way that we get in touch with this outward movement of the Spirit goes all around, is by being open to the teachings of nature. Nature is alive, it is not dead, and if it's something that we control and manipulate and dominate, its mystery is closed to us, and the shadow of nature will rule us. Proof of this is the atomic bomb, the nuclear bomb. If we do not revere nature and be open to nature's teachings, the shadow of nature will show itself and can destroy us. That's the power. That's the power when these directions of the Spirit are not honored. Do you see what I'm saying? Thomas More speaks of this in his typically eloquent and practical way, wise way. We can only treat badly those things whose souls we disregard. He says, so even things in the world, if we disregard them and we discard them, we're disregarding their soul. We're disregarding their what? Their meaning. We're disregarding their gift. We're disregarding their value. We're disregarding not only their usefulness, but we're disregarding their beauty. Thomas More also says, things suffer when they are reduced to their function. Care of the world soul requires that we see things less for what they can do and more for what they are. He says, without beauty, we suffer disturbances of the soul, depression, paranoia, meaningless, and addiction. What is beautiful? Not what is pretty, but that which lures the heart into profound imagination. And I'm struck by Alfred North Whitehead, probably one of the greatest minds and spirits of our century, who talked about major and minor beauty. And he said minor beauty was the easy harmony, coordinating colors, you know. This was minor beauty, the beauty that we can only see because only part of our sight is at work, part of our ears, part of our smell. We're half dead. We're like zombies, and so beauty becomes very, very distorted. But major beauty is when we can combine the most distinct elements that are almost impossible to combine and connect together. and then we get major beauty. I was reminded of this yesterday when my wife Allison and I went to the Black Arts Festival. That was an instance to me of major beauty as opposed to minor beauty. To enter, in some degree, the world soul of another culture, all of a sudden one's world opens up and it becomes enriched, and all of a sudden your life becomes expanded and you become more. You become a falcon. You become a song. You become someone orbiting around the ancient tower. You do not sell out to one version, a small version of what beautiful is. And that small version of what beautiful is anything that's like me. Right? Isn't that when we first fall in love? When we first fall in love, we always fall in love with what's just like us. Right? Or our ideal of what we think is beautiful. And it's such that's that immature, that first movement, you see, that first kind of little wave of the real thing of what we are talking about. A little fluctuating wave of spirit. And we begin to love what is similar, or we love totally what is different but don't know how to incorporate it into our being. So if we don't love what is different, what are we going to do? Hate it. That's what happens with relationships that are hostile dependent, that are hooked to one another out of hatred and violence. It's because they're not able to incorporate difference. And that's major beauty. And this is what we're talking about. And every time we see trash, every time we see the discarded fence, we are looking at a reflection of our soul. Every time we see anything in disrepair, we are seeing a reflection of our own soul. That is us. We cannot say it's them. That is us. But just so, every time we see something beautiful, it's wonderful, don't we, when we see the tin Lizzie or the old car that someone has kept. There's something beautiful about that. And I always look at that and I go, that's not just someone who has a hobby, who's entertaining a kind of, oh, nice, you know, I'm going to be into old cars and collect them and keep them in my garage, etc. No, I think it's really honoring the world soul. It's honoring the past of things, keeping them, not discarding them, right? But we do a lot of discarding these days, don't we? Where we get a car every year. We get new clothes and give the old ones away. Nothing we keep. We have a tendency of just giving things away because we have no soul. We will be attracted to beautiful things and we will keep things that are beautiful and we will keep things in repair when we begin to repair our soul. We begin to honor the threefold direction of spirit. That spirit moves upward, spirit moves downward, and spirit moves all around. It is a wonderful, rich life that we are made for. The question is, that motivation, you know, to continue that work and to let the work also be done in us. And that perhaps may be a little secret for you, but it's nothing that you have to go and look for. It will find you. Right? All we need to do is sit a while, and this will find us. It's nothing we have to go and strive for or try to understand or do or build. It will find us. All we need is a bit of openness, honesty, and willingness, and everything can begin. And we can get out of this kind of narrowness of the spiritual life, correct? The richness of spiritual life that goes upward, that goes downward, and that goes all around. And as Wordsworth says, it rolls.